Welcome to the So That Missions Podcast, First Baptist Church, Bernie. We're so excited you're joining us today. We're going to learn about our mission partners here at the church, John and Catherine, and we are so excited to hear their story about where they've been and where they're headed. Join us today and enjoy.
This is Pastor Chad on FBC's So That Podcast. This is an encouraging place to hear how God is working in and around us. We know that He blesses His people so that they can bless the world around them. Join us as we discuss how to join God in all that He is doing. Why is God working in our life, our church, and our community? It's so that. Hey everybody, this is Pastor Chad with FBC's So That Podcast. We're so glad that you joined us today. It's our first day back in the studio after a while. Sadie, how's everything going?
It's going well.
It's going glad well.
Glad to be here.
You've had a good summer.
I've had a great summer.
It's been a wild summer.
It has been a very wild
summer. It's been a hot summer.
It's been very warm.
Yeah, lots going on. We have some guests with us today, and this is John and Catherine. They are family in our church. They've been here this year. We're so glad that you guys could join us. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
We're doing well. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you here on the podcast. Lots going on that we're going to talk about today. But just real quick, give us a quick introduction. Tell us about yourselves, your family, and then we'll get into some bigger questions.
Yeah. So I'm John and my wife, Catherine. We moved here to Bernie 7 years ago, and we've been blessed with three wonderful children. So
what are their names? What are their names? Mm-hmm.
Thomas, Ben, and Millie, 8, 7, and 5 years old.
They're awesome. They're awesome. They're so much fun running around here all the time. It's been great. It's been great.
They are. It's a wonderful stage of life, a busy one, as all young parents know.
But for sure.
A blessing.
For sure. Anything you want to add, Catherine?
Oh, yes. No, life just is busy. John vocationally is an engineer, and I'm a homeschool mom, and so life is just busy keeping track of everybody.
Well, we are so excited. We've had so much time this last 8 months since I got here to get to know you guys a little bit. And I know it was 8 months longer maybe than you had planned to be here. So yes. I feel very blessed to get that time with you guys. But let's go back a little bit to the beginning here. Tell us about your faith background or how you became believers. Maybe you both grew. Tell us a little bit about how you grew up and came to know Christ. I think many people in our church have seen you. They know your kids. They've seen you around, but maybe they don't know some of the basics and the beginnings, the origin stories of our friends here. Mm-hmm. So I don't know who wants to go first, but just give us a little rundown of how you came to faith and what your family was like.
Yeah, it's a fun question to talk about. And, you know, I look back, I've been tremendously blessed. God gave me Christian parents who taught me from a young age about Him, about His Word. And I thank God for that all the time. Grew up in Michigan, and from a young age, I was exposed to missions. My parents had been missionaries overseas until just before I was born. They came back to the U.S. for a variety of reasons, so I never grew up with that experience.
Where did they serve, John?
They served in Nigeria.
Okay.
My dad taught at a Bible college there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. A lot of history.
Yeah.
A lot of learning there.
His older brother and his older sister was born there. And then when they were pregnant with John, they came back to Nigeria. So he was not born in Nigeria. He was born in the U.S.
Michigan.
Yeah. In Michigan. Michigan. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So you came to faith early as well then?
I did. So then I remember a lot of phases in my life where I can now look back and see God doing tremendous things. Like one time in middle school, going to a Bible camp in summer and having very evangelistic counselors who then asked me about my faith, what did I believe, and having the opportunity to profess that to other members in my cabin and walking forward and professing my faith, confessing it to others, growing in that confidence, or other seasons, you know, college, suddenly I'm my own man. What do I choose? And man, I thank God for guiding me to plug into a church and plug into ministry. A few years later, that's how I met Catherine overseas as an engineer. He was blessing me with a growing, developing career as an engineer. I love it. Enjoy designing things, making machines work. And he got led me to be connected with a Bible study at a church. Did not expect to meet a wife, but okay, there's Catherine.
Hang on a second. You're getting ahead of yourself.
Hey, we love it. The guy's excited. Excited to get to some of the most important parts. Yeah. Meeting his wife. That's good.
Yeah. So I, like John, I was also born into a Christian family and actually have a very strong faith legacy on both sides of my family. And my great-grandparents are buried in what is now Zimbabwe, but it used to be called Southern Rhodesia, and they were with the Brethren Church. And then my grandfather, many of his siblings were missionaries, and my aunt and uncles also, and then various wow. cousins. So I, from an early age, my parents discipled us children. I became a believer when I was about 3 or 4 years old, and my family just... two things were very important to my family, and that was they emphasized a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus and just fostering, growing with the Lord into maturity. And the second thing was Christian service, was serving. And my parents specifically, they made it so that it was not an obstacle to serve the Lord. And looking back, I see that it's such a gift. And often children or students have to work during the summer to pay for college. And my parents, they really elevated ministry. They really elevated serving the Lord. And so and they didn't want any barriers. So they often support us. We worked in so many Christian camps. And that's kind of how we kind of dipped our feet in ministry at the beginning. So that's how I was saved. That's kind of the family that I grew up in. And I don't know if y'all want this story of how John and I met. It kind of follows my story a little bit because I went to Ethiopia to visit my aunt and uncle who were missionaries when I was 12 years old. And it was a very foundational, very formational trip for me. And when I left Ethiopia, I knew this is the path that God had me on. I just knew that I was going to come back to Africa someday and mm-hmm. I was coming back in a ministry capacity. And it was to no surprise to my parents when I told them I wanted to become a nurse and I wanted to go overseas and be a missionary. And when I went to college, I realized that I was very good at knowledge and learning, but I did not like fluids. So and smells. That was difficult for me, which actually full circle is very interesting because I work in Eastern Africa. I've had to deal with a lot of medical things. So it's interesting how that, you know, God, he uses what we don't have anyways. And so what you feel like he didn't gift you in. But I became a teacher then, and I found myself in Budapest, Hungary, as a missionary, and I was working at the International Christian School of Budapest, and I was investing in the lives of missionary kids and local students, Hungarians, Romanians, neighboring countries, and didn't really have my mind set on or didn't really have the paradigm yet for unreached people groups. I was just solely focusing in on missionary kids. And anyways, before I left, you know, we all have to count the cost of what it means to go overseas on the mission field. And I don't know if the statistics are the same for single missionaries that they were about 12, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it was dire in that you might not find a husband overseas or get married. And I think I can remember I didn't really over spiritualize it, but I do remember going to my parents and saying, well, the Lord knows that that I want to be married someday, but I also know that this is what God has for me, what he's asked me to go do. So I think I'll just let God take care of that. And I was ready for my adventure. So
just to speak to that, there is a what's the word? A pandemic almost of available men.
Isn't that interesting?
In the Christian world. It's not just the missions world anymore. Yeah. Like there are so many young Christian women that go to Bible college and think they're going to find a husband, but just so many young guys are just not sure that it's the direction they want to go. Sure. They're trying to maybe put off growing up to some degree. So it's such an interesting thing that there was that season, but that season has even gotten broader than it used to be.
Yeah. Oh, that's And you know, I think I didn't find it as daunting because I really wanted the Lord to use me. And mm-hmm. you look in scripture, how the Lord has used women in discipleship and evangelism and spreading his church. And even today, the forefront of missions is done by single women, single men as well. They're able to go in places where families just can't. It's just not. I would say helpful for families to be. It's not healthy.
Yeah, statistically, I think that singles in missions, it's like 70%+ women, as opposed to to maybe like 51% of the population or something like that. So, it really is interesting.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, with Catherine approaching your parents about that, what did they say? I mean, that's a valid concern.
Oh yeah. Oh, my parents just, I think they really just trusted the Lord, and they just, I think they had walked with me, you know, my whole life, and I think they were just going to trust the Lord with me. And dad loves to tell this story. He loves to tell this story. He disciples a lot of young men and women at a Christian camp in Marble Falls, and he loves to tell them my story, especially to girls, to wait on the Lord, to pursue the things of God, and to wait on Him, and He will... He will bring you what you need.
Yeah,
and he brought John.
Kingdom, right?
So in my second year of teaching, I went to a church, Danube International Church, and I saw John. And I actually saw him before I went home for the summer and hoped that he would come back. It was a very transient church, and he was there when I got back. And I made sure to find out which small group he was in.
Chased
him down. And I had him over for...
Strategic engagement at its best.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had him over for like a game night, and I think I used the very last of some pecans I had to make this apple crisp. And so, you know, young single men, they're vulnerable, they're lonely.
They're hungry. They're hungry. That's it. Some desserts.
My advice would be to save your pecans so you can make a good apple crisp.
I love it.
So, yeah, that was it. Yeah.
So you guys met in Hungary. Mm-hmm. How long ago was that now?
This 2011, 2012.
Right. 11 years.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Wow. So you guys, it's really incredible. Like, my family story is so different than yours. Like, both my parents, they were divorced before I could remember. Mm. They've been married multiple times. Like, my dad follows the Lord. My mom, she's still trying to figure out her spirituality. And it's such a crazy thing. Like, my family, so I've been a missions pastor now for 20-something years, and I've had a couple interactions over the years with church members. It's like, oh, did you grow up in a Christian home? Well, not really. Were your parents missionaries? Well, no. Mm. Was your grandfather a pastor? No. And they're like, how did you end up where you're at? I'm like,
By the grace of God alone,
you know, yes, like this. Exactly. So I love it. And one more thing I was thinking while you guys were talking is, I love when I read Hebrews 12, and it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off all the sin. Yes. And I always think about those witnesses, but they're strangers to me. You know, I think about who are these people that came before that opened doors that I could know the Lord today. Mm. And you guys are talking about this heritage. You've got family members and aunts and cousins and uncles, and your grandparents were missionaries. And I think, what an incredible thing to know and have this tangible feeling that there's people who literally spent their lives serving God and opened the door. Like, you're going to see them and know them, and you're going to have a relationship. It makes it so precious to me. Mm-hmm. It makes me a little jealous, though I know that there won't be family bonds the way we know them here. But it's just a cool thing to know that there's a generational track of the gospel through your families. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful legacy they left you. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool.
With you, Pastor Chad.
Hey, amen. Just praying that God would continue that. You know, so many generations lose the faith of their families.
Right.
And so, that's incredible. Let us not be the last link in the chain. Let us keep the links moving forward.
Exactly.
All right. So, not to get too distracted in all these wild, wild, crazy ideas. So, you guys met, you married in Hungary, and not married, but you met, and then you got married.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, what was your life like? Did you guys decide then you were going to be full time missionaries? What did you stay in Hungary? Tell us what happened. We had one missionary and one vocational.
Exactly.
Yeah. We got two worlds colliding here.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were just sharing with Sadie right before we came in here about this background. And there was one time when, while we were dating, I think, we had a conversation. I think I said something like, man, I respect you, Catherine. I don't think I could ever trust God to provide my support and count on supporters to fund me.
He said, I don't think I could ever be a missionary.
It's like your famous last words, right?
Yeah.
Lord, please don't send me there.
I still married him.
Catherine, in great faith, said, this is okay. We can work this out.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where this came from, but I remember looking at you, John, and just saying, you know, it's all from God. I mean, you're an engineer, and you think that the money that you make and generated by your own hands is your own, and that it's something that you're creating, but really it's God's, and God is blessing you and giving that to you, and that we all wait on God. We all wait on him to provide for us and support us. I said that all in my wisdom of 23 years old. And and I don't really know where the conversation went from there. But I knew when we got married that the door on missions was not closed. But mm-hmm. I think that we were looking to start a family, and we were looking to be near family, and kind of just see where God would take us. I got involved in some discipleship ministry, and so I kind of had my hands full with some women's discipleship that I was doing, and then John was working as an engineer, and that kept us busy for a while.
So how did you get to Bernie?
Yeah.
This is part of the story. This continues.
So I don't know, 6 months after we got married, we had started up in Michigan, had a brutal cold winter, and moved down to Texas shortly before.
You had a brutal hot summer. You get from brutal cold to brutal hot.
Extreme, just about.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Then 6 months after that, we had our firstborn son, Tommy. But in that time, I began working for a small engineering company near Austin. And it was wonderful, fun work, making cool CNC machines, 60-foot long.
What's a CNC machine?
Yes, computer numerical controlled.
Wow. That sounds so cool, John. Yeah.
That is really cool.
Computer numerically controlled.
I think they just cut pipes.
Custom ones. Pipe cutters, filter wrappers. Big stuff for oil field.
Yeah. It sounds perfect. Yeah. It just sounds, when you said it's really fun, I wasn't thinking about computer controlled numerical machines.
It's CNC. Also,
all right. CNC machines. We got it. Those are fun.
Anyway, in that, this company had lots of work and projects, but seasons with no cash coming in.
Mm-hmm.
We went one time, a couple months without a paycheck. Plenty of work, no paycheck. We had just had the baby.
Oh.
Didn't have our proper 6 month rainy day fund. If you're into
Dave Ramsey.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I recognize that.
We depleted all our savings, had to go to my dad and ask for a loan.
Had to borrow a couple $1,000 to make the mortgage payment.
Make ends meet.
Make ends meet. Thankfully, God provided, helped finish a project. I literally brought a check to the bank from a customer and deposited it for the employer. Next week, we got our paycheck. Anyway, through that, we learned, and I had talked of, can I trust God to provide? Like, no. Even in the work I'm doing with my hands, it is God providing.
Wow.
He just showed us that. So that was a fundamental lesson I had to learn.
So that was maybe your first step in nothing I'm going to do is going to provide this safety net that I thought was.
Yeah,
it's God who's providing it. That was a big lesson I needed. Catherine had been blessed with that wisdom already.
Well, sure.
I was still learning right alongside John.
In those moments, it's really no easy. Like, oh, I know it's easier. And it's just still not. In the moments when you're looking.
And when you have a child, it's just different. Like So I think we really clung together. We really worked through that and trusted the Lord. So John looked for a new job. And so we found a job in San Antonio, and we moved to Bernie pretty quickly after we were paid.
Yep.
And we wanted to get out of that situation. But having learned a lot of lessons, having learned to really trust God that he is our provider and that that he's faithful and we can trust him. And so I think those are some lessons that when the time came to thinking about moving overseas and serving the Lord, where we had seen him be faithful. We knew that he could take care of us. And so that was really instrumental, I think, especially for John, for, kind of learning that firsthand. Mm-hmm. That here I am, an engineer, and I'm in America. I'm in Texas, of all places. And here I am, and I'm working hard 9 to 5 every day, but not bringing home any money. What's happening? And so, God allowed us to walk through that and learn those lessons, and we're very thankful.
Man, people have no... if you've never experienced what John's talking about, it really does change your entire understanding of how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we put so much effort into that stability, that consistency, and that whole sense of security that we pursue. It's like one of those American values that's a non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. When that gets messed with, the whole world kind of crumbles around you because you're just not sure what's next.
Yeah.
You know, that a significant portion of our population live in that space seems to not be a reality for a lot of folks. But it is something that in some way I hope we all experience. Not that you want that, but it right. does provide a level of freedom where you say, you know what, I'm not beholden to this job. It is not what gives me and provides for all of my needs. It really is the Lord. And that's an okay, it's a really healthy place to be in.
Yeah.
And you can think of Paul's words, right? I've been where I've had plenty and I've been in need.
Oh, for sure.
And the Lord has been present in all of those places, right? Yes. And it's just such a perfect place to really know God's providing hand, regardless of, again, whether you're in a job that provides six figures and you think everything's stable, or whether you're barely getting by check to check, it's kind of all the same.
Or no check.
Or no check if you're on support. Yeah. Literally, missions, you're raising support to pursue what God's called you to do. Mm-hmm. It's a different place. So so that's a fun and exciting thing. So there's a lot here. You're in Bernie, which... Mm-hmm. Those of us who live here, we love Bernie.
What year was this?
He said 7 or 8 years ago. So
yeah. 2015.
16, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Ben was born in 16.
The Hill Country was still the Hill Country. And,
houses weren't that expensive.
I was gonna say, it wasn't as quiet.
If only we had come then, we could have bought a house in a totally different world.
Oh,
so.
My word.
We had bad timing when we sold, but that's okay. Different matter.
If you'd only held on to it for 8 years.
Yeah, it's all the Lord's, John. It's fine.
Right. It is.
Fine. It's I mean,
that was good timing. Yes.
I get it.
Yeah. So
same boat.
So then you're working full time, you're teaching. Mm. So there's obviously a big disconnect for me to understand how you get from that reality to what's coming.
So you mentioned earlier heritage of faith, and you know, we both celebrate in our own lives and family, but it's broader than that. It's the whole church. Catherine was talking about getting plugged in with discipleship and training in that season of life. I was at the same time, the same organization that Catherine got trained with, I did as well. And there was a couple almost took me under their wings. I was a student in one of the groups that they facilitated getting trained. It was called Facilitating Relational Learning. Mm. Part of that is how to facilitate small groups well, but the bigger point is how to disciple well and the skills that are involved in doing that. Mm-hmm. And then they kept taking me under their wings and brought me along to help facilitate a training later out in Oregon at a church. Mm-hmm. So here I get to learn much further because I'm passing it on, teaching it. Mm-hmm. A great multiplicative model.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. And I was kind of doing the same thing, but I was going international and doing, I had experience in Eastern Europe. And so I was traveling to Switzerland and women were coming from all different areas, even from Africa. And so we were learning and growing. And I think God just gave us a lot of some ministry experience, some time to just have our babies and to grow in maturity in our marriage. And and so I just really see it as a season of God using us where we're right where we are at and plugging into our church, which I think is so important. If you want to go overseas as a cross-cultural worker, you need to be doing the things here in your hometown or your home church that you plan or think you would do overseas.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Yeah. And so, but at the same time, we had several cousins who mobilized and moved with their families overseas, one in Morocco and one in Chad. And,
Chad's a good guy. Just
yes. Yeah. Country too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a country too.
and so I think we just, we saw that and we just started praying. We just really started asking God what is he asking us to do? And I think many times during worship, you know, in we have the stained glass in the large auditorium and it has it's all the I am statements, but there's one particular part of the stained glass where it's the world. And in the world it's focused on Africa and it's focused more kind of that 1040 window of the Southeast Asia. And you can't help but worship and then look up at the world and look at and think about the people and think about the unreached people. And we were learning more and more about what it means. We were learning more too about missionaries that most of them go to reached areas. Mm-hmm. I think the statistics is 94% of missionaries or 96% of missionaries go to reached areas and 4% of missionaries go to unreached places. And we were learning more about the shift in the mission world to prioritize these areas. And by 2%, you know, we're talking about countries, places, people groups that don't have any access to the gospel, don't have access to a church, to biblical literature, the Bible, Even if they wanted to, they couldn't try. And so intensely Muslim places and intensely Hindu places. And I think that God just started working on our hearts and we just started praying. And I felt like every time I worshiped in the auditorium, I was looking up at that, up at the world. And I think I was quicker to respond and to want to move and to learn more. And I think John has always been the let's think about this.
He's an engineer. Yeah. Makes sense.
And
more analytical, but once I'm on board, I'm 100%, and you're not going to sway me.
Yeah,
that's the way God's created us, and we work, I think, good as a pair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you can see that. Yep.
Yeah, so we just started exploring. We started meeting with family and those who have been missionaries for a long time, and they said to cast the net wide and interview a lot of different organizations to pray and to see what God would bring back. And so that's how we... that's how we got to East Africa, how we got to Kenya, and we had just had our third baby as we started making huge strides to talking to the church and talking to supporters, and yeah, I don't know if you want to say anything more. Yeah,
I think we're good.
Yeah, that's okay. Good. So you guys went through the process. You're again living here, doing, I would say, pursuing at some level your American dream. You've got a full-time job. You've got a home. So you guys start casting the net, looking for what God's calling you to do. Mm-hmm. You're open to going overseas. Africa is on the table. Mm-hmm. You guys were pursuing unreached. So you had made a comment early on that you hadn't necessarily seen that. What caused you to understand the term unreached, and what caused you to make that shift? I mean, there's a lot of need around the world, right? So anything from orphanages to church development and strengthening all around the world, why was the unreached something that you keyed in on?
Yeah, I think Catherine mentioned this briefly, but one was actually hearing from one of her cousins who was going overseas and talking about unreached. And we're like, wait, what is that? Mm-hmm. And we started doing some research, and there's lots of great materials out there. You can turn to passages like Acts 1:8, and you see the call to go to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
And to dig into that and realize it's all of those at once that God's calling. And no, the work is not finished here. It's not going to be finished here till Christ returns. Mm. It continues. Mm. But some need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And Christ, God, is powerful enough to equip his church to do both at once. So some who have this calling from him need to be sent, need to go and be willing. I think that's a huge part of the story as we research that. Anything you want to add?
I think that I think in my heart I just realized that we could do work among the poor for forever. But if we're not giving them the hope of the gospel, if we're not serious about multiplying churches, and about giving those church their own ownership, letting them pastor their own churches, and giving them this vision for discipleship, well, then they're always going to be so needy and dependent on us, so needy and dependent on the American church or the Western church. And so I think that we just caught a vision for multiplication, and we caught a vision desiring if we're going to move our whole family and make this huge sacrifice, then we're going to go where it counts, where they were really needed. I think all of us within us, want this sense of purpose, and we wanted to be purposeful. We didn't want to just, we wanted to go somewhere new, somewhere where they're unreached and they really actually, where they need the gospel.
Yeah, that's incredible. For me, that I was a missions pastor already, and I took a class, a perspectives class, that just, it was the lesson 9. They're talking about kind of the state of the world in need, and you start hearing these definitions and thinking through just exactly that thing. Like if there is a third of the world, roughly, that has never had access to the gospel, and we have 99% of our funding go to places where the gospel has already been, then what's it going to take to see the gospel go to the 2 billion people that have no access? So, well, it's going to take extraordinary effort and work and trying to carve out little bits of money to start pushing to the frontier again. And it really struck me as something that we really need to continue to focus on. So I love that. It's funny because almost uniquely in my experience, perspectives has been one of those things that gives that shift. So you have a very amazing group around you that you would catch that without that class, that you would catch that kind of vision.
I think the people that we heard it from had taken perspective.
It almost always ends up back to that. Right, so it's so funny how much it's connected to, to
or
that.
Encouraged us. I think they encouraged us, but then they were like, well, you're already thinking that way.
Yeah,
but
it's anyways, awesome.
It still would have been helpful.
It's very cool, too, that some of those things that perspectives was almost unique ad a decade ago are becoming a little more mainstream now. Like it's so common within mission circles that people are having that vision even without having connection to the class. It's a really cool thing to see and be a part of. So you guys found a connection. You found an underage people group in Kenya. And you guys quit your job, sold your house, moved your family.
And decided to live on support.
Tell us about that. We're almost to the end of our 30 minutes, so we're gonna. I want you to answer that, and then we're gonna start maybe a part two in just a few minutes, and and we'll walk through kind of from Kenya and beyond. Okay, but just finish. How did you make that initial decision and the transition from American dream to support raise pursuing God's.
Well, and I'll say quickly, just in our conversation before this, you know, I was telling John and Catherine that I feel like in my life there's a season of a large step of faith that the Lord's calling me to or calling Dennis and I and our family to. And so just even a quick passing sentence that you guys said really encouraged and deepened my faith. So I'm hoping that through this question, Pastor Chad, that those that are listening, you know, that they'll just take this answer to heart and just say, like, the Lord can call us to do hard things that we thought we would never do, like live off support. So just wanted to say that because it is applicable to all of us. I'm sitting here thinking, like, man, can I pack up my babies and move tomorrow? I want to, but that might not be what the Lord's calling me to, but He might be calling us to do another big countercultural type of move towards. You know, but so that's I want people listening to think like this can't apply.
Well, what people are listening or hearing is that Sadie might be about to announce this the big reveal.
I'm Dennis, getting don't listen to this. Just kidding.
I'm kidding. We're not going to pressure anybody to anything.
It is so encouraging. I mean, really, it is encouraging. And I just because it's easy to get sucked into listening, and I do this all the time with podcasts. But really, truly think and meditate on how can we apply this and. The power of y'all's testimony, how can it be used?
Yeah. So in that process, I think a huge part of it was we needed help. There was a lot we didn't know. And what was that path forward? Like we were clear, okay, God's calling us to go, but how do we get there and where exactly is that? So in that process, there were several instrumental people here at FBC in that process. We met numerous times with the current missions pastor, Mike Mantooth. He guided us quite a bit. As did several members of the International Missions Committee and even led us through a course at the time, like it was Panorama.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of good learning and conversations in a group with church here.
That's
so
we're awesome.
Praying together, wrestling
That's
through
awesome.
Things.
I think ultimately, and this is the Christian experience, is that there's two stories being told in our lives. And the first story is the story of the world and what the world defines as success and what the world defines as a meaningful life, a life well lived. And then I also think there's a deeper story that's being told, and that's Jesus's story, the gospel. And he says, I'm writing your story, and this is your new identity, and this is who you are, and this is my will for you. And I think that part of this journey has just been walking and in belief of that other story, that story that Jesus defines our life, that we choose these things because of their eternal value. And we don't believe the lies that the world wants, how the world wants to decide what does a successful person look like. And I think that we walk by faith and not by sight. And our example is Jesus. Our example, you know, when we always go back to the cross and stand at the cross and we see him and how he humbled himself and came down as a man, and how he asked the Father, you know, not my will, but yours. And his obedience and his submission to the Father. And that's what we do, the same thing as he's asked us, whatever vocation we're in, whether, you know, it's as Christians, it's all sacred, right? There's no secular versus sacred. As Christians, whatever vocation we have is sacred. And whatever we're doing, we deny ourselves to some extent, and we have to obey. And I feel like that that Jesus is our example, and that's kind of what's, I think, bolstered our hearts and being able to let go and wrestle with some of these things, is because we're wrestling with them again. It's like an onion, this life that because we've been on furlough and now we're going back for another term, and we're still wrestling with feeling like, oh, we're behind. Oh, why didn't we keep our house? Or you know, we don't have enough in savings, or you know, we can feel behind in so many ways, mm-hmm. where we can feel that that we're not behind in maybe even fashion and things like that. Just the little things too, not owning a car. But then we just have to truly remind ourselves that that we're going to believe the other story. We're going to believe the other narrative, the narrative that Jesus says, "I am with you," and as you deny yourself, you're choosing me, and come follow me. And so I think that that's how it is for all of us.
You know? For sure.
And so,
I want to ask one more question, then we'll go ahead and end this. My question is this: knowing what you know now, do you regret it?
No.
Absolutely not.
No. I mean, we talk about this at times. Yeah. There are things that we, have given up, and we feel that, but we wouldn't change it. And this call to be useful kingdom workers, to disciple and see someone else grow in the maturity of their faith is just one of the richest joys I think you get to experience this side of heaven. Mm-hmm. I would not give that up.
No, and it's the letting go of other things only to hold on to other things that God gives you. And that, like that, walking with a believer, being able to share Christ for the first time with someone. And I just, I love the verse in Philippians where, Paul just holds on to the, I count all things as rubbish, as trash, compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ and holding on to Christ. And I think that our faiths have deepened, our relationships have deepened in the Lord, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. And wouldn't trade that.
Oh, I love it. Well, if you're listening, this is just the beginning of two parts. So we're gonna stop it for now and make sure you listen to the next part. We're gonna ask them more about their journey in Africa and what God's been doing with them since and where He's leading them now. So make sure you tune in for the next one. We're so thankful that you're on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And that's really this conversation is what we're all about. Why does the Lord bless us? Why does He make His face shine on us? So that the nations will know and that He will be glorified through them and in them. Mm-hmm. And that is the big purpose of all the heart of Scripture, is the Lord is revealing Himself to a people so that through them all people will know that He is God. So thank you so much for tuning in. We hope that you've enjoyed this podcast, and make sure you listen to part two. Have a wonderful day. God bless. We are so thankful that you joined our podcast today. We would love to hear any feedback you may have for us. Remember, Psalm 67 says, "May God be gracious to us and bless us, and make His face shine on us, so that your ways may be known on earth and your salvation among all nations." Don't forget why the Lord blesses us. It's so that we can be a blessing to those around us. Until next time, God bless.